CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. You made it to Monday. Congratulations through a very, very cold weekend. And Borlella was just asking me, because we don't really have this in our houses in South Africa, but he was saying, like, how summer or winter proof is my house? And my house is not proof anything. It's like there are gaps this big under the doors. There are places where the wind comes in, which is why I hate August so much. And August is like a week away. You realize that? Like, this time next week, it's August already. So it's all happening. And I have one heater in the house. I only have one. And I don't have underfloor heating. And I don't have any, like, insulation or double glazing or any of that shit. Because, you know, for 9, even 10 months of the year, it's pretty easy to deal with. It's only this...
Well, it's Africa,
you know? Yeah, correct. Most of the time. Yeah, most of the time we can handle it. But shit.
Yeah, it's been amazing to see how people in the UK have been suffering so much with the heat wave.
They hate the heat.
Because they're inside and they're trying to work.
Yeah.
And their homes are like hot boxes.
Yeah.
And it's... I always know, because when I'm on a business call with a client in the UK... Obviously, we're wearing opposite clothing, right? Mm-hmm. So they're in spaghetti straps at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm wearing like a hooded fleeced whatever. And I always have to apologize. I have to say to them, I'm sorry if I'm making you feel hot, because I've got scarves up until under my chin. And there's nothing worse than seeing someone like that when you're boiling hot. It's like packing for the opposite season when you go on holiday. But they can't believe what I have to wear indoors. Like, they're like, are you wearing a coat? yes, I'm wearing a coat. We have to indoors. Another video that I saw was of a Canadian girl who lived in Canada along the border with the US and explained in depth how their homes had been built to withstand 30 feet of snow.
Oh, my God.
She had come from really, really cold conditions all her life.
Yeah.
Moved to South Africa, and she's been here for 9 years. And she said, I can't believe that I still cannot escape the cold once I go into my own house.
Mm.
It's just, that's how our houses are built.
Yeah, you know, it's. I mean, we don't really worry about it most of the year. But then, in that 1 or 2 months, you're like, oh shit, I should really look after this for next winter. But it's also expensive and costly to winterproof your house, right? And I live here on my own, and frankly, I'm okay. I mean, like, when I'm in bed at night, I'm warm. So at night,
that's all that counts.
You know, who cares? I've got fireplaces. That helps. If I've got a fire going, it's great. Then I'll find myself sitting in a t-shirt and managing just fine. But it's like this time of the morning that it really kicks. Anyway, so yeah, weekend, any excitement over the weekend? I went away for the weekend, and it was to celebrate someone's birthday. And we just went to a place in the Magaliesberg, which was really, really nice. But again, fires and you know, trying to keep your feet warm was the main thing. So that was it was really fun.
Cold out there.
Jesus, it was freezing. Beautiful little place though. You know, just the sort of charming little hidden away. You know, really sweet. There are so many gorgeous places in South Africa if you're just prepared to look, even in the middle of winter. We have such a diverse and interesting country, just in terms of climate, geography, look and feel. I mean, this place felt almost like you were in, you know, France. It was really, really pretty, and sort of pecan nut trees, and of course they were all bare because it's the middle of winter. But it's just a very sweet little, like, guest farm, and there were about 12, 15 of us, and we were there for a friend of mine's birthday. Had an awesome time. It was really special. So that was nice. Nice to get out of the house. Nice to socialize with other people. And live your normal life. I say normal. And we'll talk to Dr. Hanan about this a little bit later on. But I've had it now. I've had it with winter. I've had it with COVID. Mm. I've had it with talking about vaccine. I'm chatful. So now I need a change. And this weekend was exactly the change that I needed. Just a bit of a gear shift. Getting out there, doing normal things.
So your holiday, because this is a huge thing that we don't, people don't address enough. Were you doing the classic, there's cottages at this place and everyone has to rent, share a place? Because that can become a nightmare.
No, there's no sharing.
Get paired with a friend.
You no, like, oh, there wasn't. God. No, there was no
I'm
sharing.
I'm so happy for you.
Like, I'm not good at that.
You ever been trapped in that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Hey,
we're all going away, guys. I've already booked the houses and I already booked for you who you're staying with. Oh, my God. What a nightmare. No, I absolutely hate this.
I think you can't do that to people because sometimes there are clashes. And also, you can't put some people – if you put someone who's hugely neat and tidy into a room with someone who's just a messy person who drops things wherever they walk, you can't – you're expecting those people to – just happily get along. It's not that you need your room, you know, you need your place where you can actually be in refuge, where you can sleep, snore, fart, brush your teeth,
masturbate,
whatever. Well, there wasn't any of that, thank God. But you know, but you can't be paired with someone like, what if you end up with someone you really don't like, or worse, you end up with someone you like but you don't know what they are like in their bedroom? And then
you end up hating them by the time you leave.
Oh my God, no.
There's always a busybody in those mass events. So I'm this guy. I've already booked my own cottage if we're going to a place. I don't want anyone staying in the same house as me.
We would have guessed that about you. Yeah.
You got the people in there, they don't keep the kitchen tidy. And then I got to pretend that's okay. Like, no, thank you. I'm paying extra and don't come near me.
Well,
I'll see you at the braai.
We've made it, and we did make a deal over the weekend. We weren't going to talk about COVID, and it worked again like a charm. There was no discussion of COVID or vaccines or any of that shit, which was excellent. So everybody talked like normal people, like we used to in 2019, and it felt
way good. Back in 2019.
I know. So someone sent a picture on one of my WhatsApp groups over the weekend of a little gathering we had at my house last year with some friends. And they're like three, four people in this one picture. And one of the girls replies, the good old days. She's like, when we were young. I'm like, what are you fucking talking about? This last year. And it wasn't the good old days. It was the middle of coronavirus. It was like in the middle of it. I'm like, what do you mean? Don't you remember this exactly a year ago? She's like, oh.
Maybe it was her meth night when she was looking at these pictures.
It seems like it. I mean, clearly. Yeah. Anyway. So did you do anything fun over the weekend?
No. No. You know, I don't feel bad about saying that anymore.
No. It
can't be expected of most people. But, you know, things will get better. Restaurants are open again, which is fab.
Yes.
So we can do that. I'm actually quite excited.
Our benevolent great leader, the dear leader, Cyril Ramaphosa, went on TV last night. I didn't watch him. I just waited for the summary updates from my friends. I've got one friend and she gets the little infographics, puts them out to everybody. Then you don't have to watch the old asshole. You know, you can just listen to you can get the summary.
Yeah. There was nothing interesting that was said or profound. It
you know,
very straightforward.
This guy keeps missing a chance. He keeps missing a chance. He's like the Bulelo, if we have to use a sport terminology, like let's use soccer, for example. He keeps being teed up perfectly with goals, right? He's the striker and everybody else in the team is delivering beautifully to set him up to strike and to score that goal. And he just he walks past the ball every time. So what I'm saying is that last night he had a chance, this guy, to reshuffle the cabinet, to create some confidence, to say to people, you know what, Becky Trela is really fucked up. He's a useless minister. I'm going to get rid of him. Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula is about the worst defense minister you could possibly imagine for that role. We're going to get rid of her. And just shaking up the ANC a little bit, because then he's also demonstrating his power, right? And he can invigorate like the confidence of the people. But no, he doesn't even have the balls to do that. He's like a frightened little rabbit who doesn't know which way to turn. He just has no balls, this man. No balls at all. It's very unfortunate. It's so sad to see, because what you're looking at is somebody who, even he, this is the story of the ANC, but it's Cyril's story. He's just been given jobs that are beyond his capacity to do. That's what it is. It's what BEE does all over South Africa. It's what the ANC does inside its ranks. It's what happens in municipalities. It's what happens inside of Home Affairs. It's what happens in so many places in corporate South Africa, too, with white and black people, frankly, who are advanced beyond their position of
no,
competence.
Of
and here's this guy, and he's just incompetent. He's like, that guy would never get a job in my company.
I think it's actually unfair to say that it's what happens broadly in corporate.
It does.
Corporate has become so fastidious. They've got so many rules to follow, unlike in government. And I know this because my brother is in HR in global recruitment for a big bank.
Global, there's different so many story. In South Africa, we'll take whatever we can get. We just don't have enough qualified people in this country.
Well, the thing is, the rules is rules.
Rules is rules.
There's nothing like that in government. I mean, we've got people who are qualified as primary school teachers who are leading the country. You don't get that in corporate anymore.
Well,
so I am defending corporates a little bit.
Not what you get.
But I think there's a 1%.
Government's a lot. Like
this.
I think banks, the banks your brother's probably dealing with, is there's a sharp end where we only look at Harvard, UCT.
Yeah.
Most of corporate is, if I know you, you can come in. Like we've all been, we know what's going on. Leanne, your brother's unique to be global bank is he's a 1% guy, even in the 1%.
I'm afraid so.
You mustn't use that as the rule.
Like
corporate
there's so many,
is Bulelo, a bunch of.
How many people do you know who got their jobs in big corporations in South Africa because they know someone there? Lots.
Listen.
White people, black people, we all know them, right? Lots of these people who they've silver spoon, they went to this school so they know that person, or they have family friends who are in charge of this there, and now they're going to work. They'll intern with them for a while, and then before you know it, they've got a permanent position. They're usually in marketing or something where they can't really do any damage, and then they stick around forever. No, really, it's the truth. And I'm not even going to be nice about that anymore. When I meet people like that now, I'm like, who's your boss? I need to speak to your boss. And they're like, why? And like, because I can tell that you are not built for this job. I can tell that
you. It's when you go Karen on the ass.
Yeah. No, you have to say, who's your manager? They go like, why? You can say, because I can tell that you are either related to someone in this job, or there's a bit of window dressing going on, or it's nepotism, or whatever it is, because it's enough already, you know? And of course, corporations aren't nearly as bad, Leanne, you're right, as government. But like Cyril, here's the president of the country. How did Cyril get in there? Well, he used to be a trade unionist, so he had the right friends at the right time. He was instrumental in helping to draft our constitution, which I'm always going to be grateful for. He did that with a very large delegation from the ANC and some pretty smart people in the ANC at the time anyway. There were some real thinkers then. Rolf Meyer, who was in the old National Party, and they put the constitution together. And I'm going to be very grateful to Cyril for the rest of my life for that, because I do believe we have a fine constitution. But to run things, clearly not the right guy. Clearly not. Don't tell me, oh, but he was a successful businessman. No, he wasn't. He was well positioned. He was the first real beneficiary of BEE in a big way, like a monstrously big way. And don't tell me he didn't have really great. And he didn't have really great and really, really Machiavellian partners in old apartheid businesses who saw a way to keep themselves in the loop by being friends with a guy who was hugely connected in the ANC. I mean, we can all see it now, right?
Well, he was sent out in and amongst a cabal, a guy called Tokyo Sex Wale as well.
yeah, exactly. These were the guys
they were sent out to go and chat to Umpit and the boys out in the Val there.
Yeah.
As we're transitioning, and we all know where that's. Ironically, them and a few became.
And of course, all those old white businesses were like, well, let's make friends with this guy because he seems to be very politically connected, and we need to have some government business in order to keep our businesses where they are or grow them, which was smart. I mean, that's smart for Cyril. It's smart for them. But this is not like rocket science stuff. He didn't invent, online payments like Elon Musk did or perfect them.
He's not a businessman.
No, he's not.
And I hate when people call him an entrepreneur.
He's really not.
No, you don't know your history if you say Cyril Ramaphosa is an entrepreneur. He's not. He grew off the back of, well, the apartheid regime's sort of tax money and ours.
Yeah.
That's how he bought McDonald's.
And so did.
And the McDonald's.
And before, Mbulelo, before you and I get accused of being anti him and anti ANC only, that's exactly what the old National Party did with so many of its cadres who were Broederbond members in the old regime.
Yeah.
And it's what people have continued to do in smaller ways, shapes, and forms, like Ace Magashule and his children and Jessie Duarte and her friends. You know how it goes in the ANC. That's how it works, because a lot of these people wouldn't make it on their own. Anyway.
Yeah. I think the royal family is more has more nepotism.
Yeah, whoa, you're going to the final level. Yeah, I mean, really? You're not supposed to talk about the source here, Leah. That's too much. Whoa.
So if you guys had to, firstly, I have to ask, and the answer is probably no. Is there a specific person you have in mind who could probably be a really good leader for South Africa? Probably no. And even if there was, they always disprove themselves and disappoint us when they get there. But if you had to perhaps in that case take characteristics from world leaders that you know and put them together and splice someone together, who would you use?
I'm going to do this for Mbulelo because he's already made his point clear on a number of occasions. He just wants a bureaucrat technocrat who can just do the job. He doesn't want anyone with personality or character. He says like an Angela Merkel. Am I right?
You are the president of any country, and you see the best ones, should be the best administrator in the country.
Okay.
That they shouldn't be, that's all.
But so it won't be, that person will never come from South Africa, because we're going to vote emotionally and we vote because someone's charming and nice and we want to be their friend. We're so stupid. We there's so many broken people in this country that they would vote for someone because they like the person's way of speaking. They like the way that that person dances. They like the way that that person talks about them. They're looking for a daddy or they're looking for a best friend, and they vote for that person. And that's why that what you want will never happen, Bulelo. But Sun Marie's got a much more important question. She says, can we buy booze? That is all we want to know.
Yes, Anne-Marie, we can. So,
that's all she cares about.
We're back to Mondays to Thursdays from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m.
That's all she wants.
Anne-Marie.
That's all she cares about.
Oh, that's fair.
You know, that fucking drunken Anne-Marie, that's all she cares about.
I think there are going to be a lot of people who are already drunk at about 11:30 this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of relationships have been saved. We all know that as much as we love our partners, children, probably you need a bottle of wine and a half on a Friday just to actually have to still see your husband for the weekend and your, you know, Johnny screaming. So shout out to those folks out there.
Andy says, like to your question, Leanne, Thuli Madonsela. Okay, so I'm going to be cynical about this for a second because I do like Thuli Madonsela, right? But she did a really good job as a public protector, where she went after people regardless of party alliances. She did the right thing. She did her job. In some ways, she fulfills all Mbulelo's little checkboxes, right? Because she was that.
How much do you know
about Thuli Madonsela's politics? I mean, you may follow her on Twitter, and she may be very good as a public protector. But how much do you know? See, the point is nobody even does any research. Like, we don't really go into what people's ideology is. When last did you hear an interview with a person in the ANC about their point of view on important issues, social welfare, on the economy? Nobody ever interviews anyone in the ANC about these things. This is how our media are so backward, right? No one ever sits down with Cyril and says to him, okay, what is the best system for the country's economy going forward? How do we build the best possible economic system for people to be able to live, to make money, to explore opportunities, to employ other people? No one ever asks him that. They was like, tell us about the factionalism in the ANC, or tell us about your role in the struggle, or tell us about what you think of Donald Trump.
What's your cultural background, and
how
well do you get on with traditional leaders?
How much do people ask those questions? They don't, because there's no desire to know that in the general public. Most people in this country are like, nah, I like him. He's a nice guy.
And I heard I was sitting at a restaurant.
Julie Madonsela is such a nice woman.
Oh, just a lot. What were they saying? Beginning of, we're so led or whatever by Cyril. What was the thing that the Yenters were saying?
Yeah. We are led.
Thank God for Cyril. Thank God for Cyril.
Pray for Cyril.
Thank God. Yeah. But I heard a bunch of...
Even last night,
yeah.
I saw briefly on Instagram, thank you, Cyril. Like these grateful peasants. These grateful peasants going, oh, thank you so much, Cyril, for allowing us to buy liquor again. That's all we wanted. I'm like, you've never been free in your life, have you? Forever in chains, waiting for your overlord to give you permission to do everything. What a life. You don't know what freedom is. You don't deserve freedom. That's what you're doing. Seriously.
Why do we owe him anything? I never heard Martin Luther King saying he expects people to thank him when he did what he did. Like, okay, you did it, but did you do it so we can thank you? Martin Luther King never, ever, ever once asked anybody.
The only thanks he got.
Cyril didn't ask for thanks.
The only thanks that Martin Luther King got, and you know what? This is how grateful history will be to you if you do the right thing. And I'm a massive fan of Martin Luther King. The only thanks he got was some lunatic's bullet. He didn't ask for thanks. So, anyway. I mean, such a nice guy, says Charles Mtibe. And you're so right, dude. I mean, like, that's what people say. They go, oh, such a nice guy. People just want a friend. Stop asking for politicians to be your daddy or to be your friend. Just stop it. It's childish. It is because you've got a big hole in your life somewhere. You're trying to make politicians your best mate. I mean, come on. I remember during the George W. Bush Al Gore election in America, they did a survey among women. Okay, and this is a huge argument for women not to have the vote, if you ask me, this particular story. They did a poll. They asked women, who would you vote for and why? And I mean, it was like a 1,000 women in, I don't know, LA County or something. So it wasn't a great representation of women. And therefore, I won't hold it against all women. But the women in this survey are precisely the kind of people who shouldn't be allowed to vote. They were like, no, we really like Al Gore. He's so good looking. But we like George.
Oh, my God.
We like George W. Bush because this was some time ago, Leanne. And if you're comparing, you know, bananas and bananas, maybe Al Gore looked better than George. Maybe George looked better than, I don't know, who cares? But that's not what you're voting for. A bunch of these women, the majority of them said they would vote for Al Gore because he was better looking. And then the second biggest category was women who said they would really like to go out as a friend. They'd like to go out on a date with George W. Bush and have a beer with him because he seems like the kind of guy who'd be really fun to talk to. I'm like, this is not how you elect leaders. It's disappointing. This is so disappointing that people think that way. Like, I like a politician who makes me feel like I'm sitting with a friend. No, you don't. You want a politician who can make better decisions than you can. Because clearly a lot of those
you probably want Gertrude from accounts.
Yes.
Who quietly does her work and doesn't really socialize with anyone and has zero personality. I think we do. We choose, we go for the personalities. And I think that's where one of the biggest faults of the majority, obviously the majority, it's been proven, of the country, was when it came into voting in Zuma, especially after the bored spell we had before him with Thabo Mbeki.
Yeah.
It was fun to have somebody who liked to dance around and laughed, and because we hadn't seen that.
They wanted to
you just want Gertrude from accounts, right?
Well, I mean, we want Thabo Mbeki. He was a good president, but don't forget, even I was one of those dumb people who at that time said, no, Thabo Mbeki's a centrist and he's too much of a bureaucrat and he puts out this boring letter once a week that nobody reads. You remember all of that shit.
Well, it's like looking back at photographs of yourself on the beach 15 years ago. And at the time, you thought you were fat. And now you look at them and you're like, oh my God, I'm so ungrateful. I looked amazing.
Yeah.
Good Lord. You should actually dislike a little bit of your leader always and have a bit of fear, because let me tell you why. Is someday your leader should have to make a choice that will go against your best interests. They will always have to. Yeah. And people forget that, because
I mean,
even our good friend from Socrates 3,000 years ago said not every vote should count the same and not everybody should get to vote. So
right.
We knew this in the very beginning.
I had the same conversation with someone over the weekend, which is maybe why it's manifesting this morning again. But, you know, here again, like the struggles in the mind, says Raz. Your government cannot move forward, flogging a dead horse. So right. Okay, so right.
Well said.
Wendy Nahal says, Fikile Mbalula was interviewed by Stephen Sacker on Wednesday night. It was a total train wreck because our politicians have never been held to account. I want to see that interview. I haven't seen it yet, but thanks, Wendy. I'll take a look. Ashley says, I know, it's crazy. My aunt likes Biden because Obama endorsed him, and according to her, Obama is charming. I'm like, oh my word. Yeah, that's it. Oh, I really like Barack Obama.
I'd like to see what it's like one day when we, you know, as we've ended up in the past with five males in the running, what it's going to be like when there are five females in the running. And a lot of it will be based on their looks.
Yeah.
And we know that. That's why politicians choose certain ties. That's why women wear certain haircuts or, you know, are styled differently, because it does have a part to play. But I do like to think that we've move beyond that as a society in for the majority of the part.
Charles says you're spot on, Gareth. Our media is up to shit. Now this is a very valid point, because this is something we can actually do something about, like the media. Charles says, case in point is the biggest headline this morning is the liquor is back. Really? Is that the most important thing about our president's speech? No, you see, no one will talk about how the social grant has come back into action, that 380 Rand or whatever it is. Now,
that's come back. The measures that have been taken to support businesses in rebuilding, that to me was the biggest part, especially in KZN.
The headline really should be free government money, more taxes for everyone. That's what it should be.
Actually, the headline is 500 billion still not recouped or accounted for.
Good point. Yeah,
that's the real thing. Yeah. But I just want to finish off on what we were talking about here. Is that the biggest problem is with ourselves as individuals? Is that look how bad we are, all of us, at choosing partners? Because you must always start with yourself. I said on Friday, everything in life is your fault. Everything, and what we have is on the weekend. I overheard a conversation. Peeking at living my best life, and I absolutely resent that, because I hate that living my best life thing. It's so entitled. It's like, actually what you should do is live a proper thought out life, and that's going to be a brutal life, because stop worrying about what makes you feel good. What is good? And those are not the same thing, right? We're so bad at making good decisions individually, including myself.
Yes.
That of course we're going to pick train wrecks.
Preach, like, brother. If I were a woke leftist, I'd be going like this now for your speech that you just gave. But even
Honda.
I still think your speech is spot on. And, you know, I'm going to go back to a lot of people agree with you, Mbulelo. I mean, Jeremy says, Angela Merkel would be great. She has the world's most reliable haircut and will not be distracted by Dashing, but I think they meant fashion. So there we go.
Absolutely. Chemistry grad as well. Shout out.
Spot on. All right. Very good. CZ just pointing out that he thinks that the acting minister in the presidency is hot. Is that...
Who said again?
I saw her just, you know, there was a speech somewhere last week where she was talking. I can't remember what her name is. With ministers, and there's so many acting ministers in our cabinet at the moment. It's like Hollywood. Okay. Let's get to some important stuff, because it is 5:30. There are some headlines we need to pay attention to. Dr. Hanan will be joining us shortly, and we'll find out from him how we can deal with compassion fatigue. We'll also have a guest joining us in that discussion. That's coming right up. First, a South African swimmer broke the Olympic world record. Tell us about this, Mbulelo.
They kept calling her. So they always have a Brit and an Aussie doing commentary, just because those two accents are the best for all commentary. And it's
Schoonmaker. Schoonmaker, yeah.
Yeah. Schoonmaker. They're Schoonmaker. absolutely just blistering. Pity it wasn't in the final, but Olympic record, and that is just insane. Yeah. for them to do it. And what's quite cool is a lot of people thought records wouldn't fall because there's no crowd, but some people perform better. It's like being at practice, you know, some people are better. So no, she blew them away. I mean, she came out of nowhere and and by the way, she could have been faster because her cap eventually was falling off. She was wearing two caps. And obviously in terms of drag, that would have created that for like the last 20 meters. She was so far ahead. She could have broken the world record.
She had a bucket that was paddling water for her.
Yeah. It was holding water. But good for her. I mean, listen, you just pointed out something really interesting. Like I find it a little bit sad that there aren't crowds, and that opening ceremony seems, by the little bit that I didn't watch it, but I got some social media, seems to be a complete waste of time. They may as well not have done it. You know, why bother? Why bother? It's just so pathetic. I mean, it's bad enough that the Olympics have been reduced to a shadow of themselves this year round. But if you're going to do an opening ceremony without a crowd, rather don't do it. The events, of course, people all over the world can watch on their TVs. And I may watch some of the Olympics. I like the Olympics. But you make a good point. It's like some people perform really well without a crowd. That's interesting.
When I was playing football, right, there were some players who we had in the academy who were untouchable at practice.
Mm.
When the lights come on, they just didn't pitch up. And it's like it's a sports psychology thing. I don't know what to call it. Is you could have guys who practice like absolute trash. The ref blows the whistle for something that matters, and you've got a different animal. It just happens even at the very top level. It's such an interesting thing.
Yeah. Like I'm going to call it. I said once decades ago, there was some reason why people couldn't watch the game. We were on 5FM at the time, and the Springboks did so well. And I said, people just shouldn't watch. We should just get the results afterwards. They must play in private, and then we hear the results afterwards if that's how we're going to perform.
Well, I don't know if that would go well for the sport overall. It's not going to make them any money, that's for sure.
Poor sponsors.
Yeah, look, good for the swimmer of ours, Tatiana Schoonmaker is her name. And you know what? Great that we've got an Olympic world record there. Because that's...
Olympic record, not world record. Olympic.
Olympic seconds. Record, sorry. Olympic record-breaking swim in the 100 meters breaststroke, heat 5.
Penny Haynes, remember her?
Yes.
She was the breaststroke queen before, so we may have another one.
This is great news. So well done to us, and we will claim that one, South Africa. Let's take it. KZN is going to focus on restoring its economy in a three-month recovery after the riots. Premier Sithole Zikalala said almost all sectors across the provincial economy have been heavily affected by the widespread violence that took place nearly 2 weeks ago. Following those acts, he said they've got a battered economy that they want to restore. And he says the province has its own three-month action plan to stabilize sectors affected by the violence. This will include rates relief and rental holidays for businesses. Well, that's good. You know, you can, in terms of rates relief, I suppose that's the least you can do as a municipality of eThekwini, for example, right, is to not let people have to worry about rates and taxes when all your infrastructure that you're supposed to be providing has been burnt down or destroyed. The road to full recovery, he says, will be long and hard and will require all stakeholders to work together to reverse the negative impact. And he said they are also going to work on building investor confidence. Well, let's see how that goes. Obviously, I'm holding thumbs for KZN. I want them to do well. But I don't know that the people that we've got in charge there are going to be able to deliver on any of that. Let's see. And then a large meteor wowed Norway after blazing through the night sky. Footage shows powerful flashes. This is amazing. What a great story. Of light over Norway, followed by what witnesses described as loud bangs on Sunday. Norwegian police say they received a flurry of emergency calls, but there were no reports of injuries or damage. Hello, is that the police? This is Sven from northern Norway. I'm in near Lapland, but I saw this terrible flash in the sky and suddenly the boom. And then we were worried. What can we do? That's what happened in Norway. Team of experts is hunting for little bits of the meteorite, which they believe landed in a forest near the capital of Oslo. So it was right down in the south, not in the north of Norway. Cool.
Huh? I was watching some of it live on someone on TikTok went live while they were filming this whole thing. And that's exactly what it sounded like in the background, where people were just kind of commenting on what was going on.
Norwegians.
I mean, if that happened here, people would be like,
they'd think God was coming.
Would immediately think it was the end of the world, you know?
No.
Oh, thoughts and prayers, though, for the partners who have somebody who believes in star signs. Could you imagine that whole thing? Because wasn't it the full moon as well or whatever? I don't know if obviously it wouldn't be for probably for them, but can you imagine them saying, oh, this is the god Achmin Ra or whatever. No. And, you know, all the Sagittarius are going to make money this month or whatever bollocks they believe. Thoughts and prayers to you out there in Norway.
Why are shoemakers so fast all the time?
That took me a second. Oh, South Africans are great.
There is no more audience since the internet and cell phones turned everyone into broadcasters. There's a big issue for corporate advertising and alcohol campaigning. That's so true, you know. Parallel parking making that point. There's no one who can actually be in the audience because everybody's so busy being the broadcaster at the moment, but it'll sort itself out soon. Audiences, look at Bulelo holding up his phone. Are you selfieing there or are you actually filming us?
No, I think what they say, so you ever seen at sports events, which I've never understood. That's what people
and concerts.
I'm watching the concert like this. I'm watching the football World Cup final. This is how I'm watching. What are you doing? You're at the event.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. How exciting for you. We're going to talk to Dr. Hanan Bushkin in a little while. We've got our regular Monday feature, It's Going to Be Okay. And this is where we talk about, you know, the impact of what the last almost 2 years now, we're going close to 2 years, has done to us and what we can do to get our mental health on track. And Dr. Hanan is especially well-equipped to deal with this for us and to help us deal with it, frankly. So we'll be speaking to him and we will have a guest. And we'll talk a little bit about something that I think is affecting many of us. And that's coming up in the next couple of minutes. One last headline I want to refer us to quickly. Zuckerberg wants Facebook to become online metaverse. So this guy, as if he hasn't damaged society enough, he now wants to transform Facebook from a social media network into a metaverse company in the next 5 years. What does that mean? Well, it's an online world where people can game, work, and communicate in a virtual environment using VR headsets. This is all you need, is to let Mark Zuckerberg into those parts of your life he doesn't already control. Dun, dun, dun. What do you think of this?
It's also, again, it's people messing around with platforms that work well on their own. They're trying so hard to develop it into something else so that it can compete and do better. Please just,
you know what,
create a new platform, really. And leave Facebook alone. There are millions, billions of millennials and boomers who are enjoying the platform.
Yeah, and there are lots of people who then enjoy, in the next generation, Instagram, and there are a lot of people in the next generation who enjoy TikTok, and there'll be a new one. There'll be a new one. But Mark Zuckerberg is obviously looking to the future of his company and saying, I've got to keep coming up with new ideas. So what the idea here is that you won't just be sharing content online. You will be making content online. You're in the content. So he said, people shouldn't live through small glowing rectangles. It's not how people are made to interact, he said, speaking of the reliance on mobile phones. A lot of the meetings that we have today, you're looking at a grid of faces on a screen. That's not how we process things either. Oh, you think so? How do you know what we humans do, lizard brain? Anyway, one application of the metaverse that he gave was being able to jump virtually into a 3D concert after initially watching on a mobile phone screen. And Bulelo and Leanne, I don't think you even knew the story was coming up, but when you were talking about people who go to concerts and film it through their phone, this is precisely the problem. I don't think he's going to be able to solve that problem. I think he's listen, let's just stop being angry at him for a second and take stock of how great Facebook can be when it's used properly. Like, it does allow you to connect with friends and family overseas and in different parts of the world, and does remind you of people's birthdays. You know, it's got a place.
There are things that keep us there are groups on there, you know, human resource groups. We get jobs through Facebook.
Sure.
We're able to shop through Facebook.
Sure.
We can sell our goods through Facebook and rent our homes and properties.
And have affairs.
and have a fair
as well. Yeah, but it's opened up. It's been very good for society.
Okay, but also, I mean, that's enough. You can't one platform is not going to do everything for us. So, you know, Mark, let's start again. I'm not going to be a douchebag with you this morning. So if I know Mark, you know, sometimes listens. So Mark Zuckerberg, you know, you've done well. Facebook's great. We like Instagram. We really like WhatsApp. That's terrific. What would we do with what would we do without that? But that's enough. Don't be greedy now and try and take over the parts of our lives that you don't already have some hand in. It's enough.
Although I
you've
can't
done
be
very
a
well.
I can't be a hypocrite. Because I celebrate when the Oak from Pretoria goes sends stuff to the space station.
Yeah.
And I always say, okay, he's pushing society forward. Yeah. Zucks, for all of the sort of insidious side of things, is, the amount of work they are doing in deep learning at Facebook that I've read about is that's moving us forward. I can't be a hypocrite and say, I'm happy when it's Musk. I'm not when it's, what did you call him? Lizard brain.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry. I need to hold a constant position. Shout out Zuckerberg. Shout out Musk.
Fair enough.
Shout out Branson and his private island.
The world would not be a better place without him, I think is fair to say.
Absolutely.
Even for those of us who criticize him. Like, there's a small part of me that's, even though, you know, he may not be a very admirable person, and he, you know, there's the story of the social media. Remember that movie about how he actually started Facebook? And, you know, he may not be an upfront, fantastic kind of guy all around, but I think the world is better with Mark Zuckerberg in it. And that's saying something. So let's move on to a much more serious and much more personal issue, but it's also kind of funny, because how often in your day do you feel this way? So we're going to check in on your mental health and tackle your mental well-being in this new normal that we're going through. Dr. Hanan Bushkin is a renowned psychologist, head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg, and he's a regular friend of ours on the show. Hey, Dr. Hanan, how are you?
Hey, how's it, guys? Good, how are you?
Good. We're back after a nice cold weekend and ready to get our heads right for the week, so I'm glad that you could join us. And we're also going to be joined by Matapelo Monaisa, who's a good friend of mine. Hey, Matapelo, how are you?
Morning, how are you?
You look fresh as a daisy this morning. You're going to teach me how to do that.
What? I mean, who wakes up so early in the morning? I think my brain is finally kicking in.
It's criminal, right? So this week,
absolutely.
This week we're going to talk about something that's close to your heart and I suppose many of ours, and that is compassion fatigue. So we got an email from you, which I really loved, and I'm going to read parts of it. You said, I'd be interested to hear what Dr. Hanan has to say about the newfound dark side in some of us. It's become a cliche, but we're living through interesting and unpredictable times. These are your words, Matapelo. It may not be a first for humanity, but it is quite a situation. I recently told my siblings that I'm tired of talking about the infections, the fatalities, and other recent sideshows, because I feel like our social media platforms now resemble a perpetual condolence book. Who can't relate to that? You said every day we receive news of a family member, a friend, or a colleague who has succumbed to the virus. If it's not death, it's job losses. It's beginning to be, in the beginning, it was a complete shock to the system. The news would sting so deep, and I had a genuine feeling of concern and sadness. But each time I heard that someone I know had COVID, I'd be filled with dread. Well, that lasted for about 5 minutes, because now I'm in a state of numbness. I don't even want to talk about it, really. I don't want people to call me. They must just text, according to you. So you said, I actually feel as if I have a standard response to some of these things. That's if I can bring myself to say anything at all. I literally feel close to nothing, and I'm embarrassed to admit that at times I don't even register the news. It's like someone telling me that I have 2 minutes left during a presentation. I hear it, but I don't hear it. So Dr. Hanan, that's kind of, do you want to add anything to that, Matapelo? Because I think a lot of people feel exactly the way you feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are already tired of hearing every single time that this one has passed on, this one has got the COVID. Immediately, you start imagining this ICU room with wires and things beeping all over the place.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost like, but then in all of this, what about my poor little feelings now? Because, you know, they're being bashed left, right, and center on a regular. And it's almost as if, but who is checking in on me and my psychology?
Mm.
Never mind the fact that you have to now sit at home and work from home full time. And as we all know, when you work from home, that means that you're working ad nauseum. We don't have working hours anymore. You can't really define them. So on top of that, then you keep getting all of these messages on your social media, or you get phone calls that such and such has passed on, such and such has passed on. And it's actually gone, it's gone like that for an entire year now. So you almost, you feel so numb. Like when you get told that somebody has passed away that you're really close to, it's like, oh, okay. And
Now what?
Next.
What am I expected to do here? So
exactly.
Yeah, Hanan, what is your sort of top line response to that?
Well, I understand why the dominant topic is COVID and all the stuff that goes around it. I mean, these days you meet somebody and it's, how are you? How's the family? How's COVID? How's the vaccines? I mean, that's kind of the dominant topic. So that's what you would see on your social media. And because you turn on the news and that's the dominant topic. You turn on the Olympics and everybody's wearing masks and suddenly that's a dominant topic. You turn on Sunday night and Cyril Ramaphosa comes on and you want to hear what he's got to say about the dominant topic, which is COVID. So I understand why that's the dominant conversation that people are having. But the reality is that you define the kind of dominant topic that features in your life. So almost think about it. This is your home and some people are knocking on your door and going, hey, can we talk about COVID? And you get the chance and you've got the power to choose whether you want to talk about it and welcome them in or welcome other people in. And sure, that means that you might actually lose some friends or change the dynamic of your relationships with the people that are around you. But ultimately, you decide who comes in. And of course, I'm a big fan of being compassionate, of course. I mean, especially if it's a close friend or a family member that's lost somebody who has gone through this some form of trauma during this time. But I'm also a big fan of focusing on things that you can control. Set boundaries with people. Let people know what you're prepared to talk about and where the limits. The problem these days is, you know, people, a massive topic is, you know, yeah, I need to set boundaries. I need to let people know what I can and what I can't do, what I'm prepared to accept, what I'm not prepared to accept. But then when I turn to people and I go, well, tell me your rule set for yourself. Tell me what are your rule sets for what you're willing to accept. And tell me what your rule sets are for what you're not willing to accept. And I'm telling you, 99 out of 100 people have got no answer. So if you do not know what you are prepared, and that, by the way, that it goes for, extends to relationships, that extends to friendships, that extends to relation between you and your boss. If you don't know what you're willing to accept and what you're not willing to accept, how will you ever, ever let somebody else know the same? So start with what is right and what is wrong for me, so you can actually express it to the person that's sitting in front of you.
All right. But before we carry on with this, I just want to throw in, you know, a situation that I've dealt with a couple of times where I've said to people, I don't want to talk about this stuff because I've had enough and I'm tired of it. And I know Matapelo is busy nodding because she and I have had this conversation before. And it wasn't because she and I wanted to talk about COVID. It's because she and I didn't want to talk about COVID with other people, right? So you set that rule, but some people can't help themselves. They don't listen. And you make that rule. And, you know, you can't be like a rule master about this. You can't have punishments lined up for people who break the rule. But I've said, for example, to people that I work with and the people that I see in my life regularly, my family and friends, I've said, guys, can we please not talk about the vaccines, the virus, or any of that stuff? There's so many other things that we can talk about, and I'm happy to. But if we can, here we avoid this stuff. They just can't help it. They have to give you the obituaries every day. They have to tell you, like, these are the people. Did you hear about this one? It's like it's their world, and they don't care how much they impose it on you. What do you do then?
For sure, but that's where the compassion fatigue comes in, because when they enforce their will and what they want to talk about and what they need on you, and it's not necessarily what you are prepared to talk about and what you need, then obviously it drains you while it fulfills them. So I think it is important to set the boundaries and to be a rule master for your life. Listen, a lot of conversation that we have with people are inconsequential. How are you? How are the kids? How's the weather? Oh my God, it's so cold. It's -4 degrees. Ah, nobody gives a shit. But the big stuff that's going to drain you of energy, those are the things that you want to actually set rules about. So I don't want to talk about vaccines about with somebody that maybe has a completely opposing view that will lead us to nowhere. Mm. I don't want to talk about COVID and Ramaphosa with somebody that has opposing views to me that's going to lead us to nowhere, just conflict. So let's not talk about it. And if you want to talk about it, then I'm actually going to just do a moonwalk away from this conversation.
Right. And you can do that without having to feel bad, because maybe this person's also dealing with their own trauma and their way of dealing with it is talking to you. What do you do then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's how they feel better about their position and themselves, by inflicting their worldviews on you. And your job is to go, listen, this is the deal for our conversation. This is the deal for our relationship. In order for me to be here, I need X from you. Do we agree? No? Then we're going to have a little bit of a breakup. And a breakup doesn't mean we're not going to see each other again, but we're certainly going to end the conversation right there. And we're going to have another conversation at another time. There's nothing inappropriate about that. There's a lot inappropriate about, I will accept whatever you put on the table. I will accept whatever you want to talk about. There's a lot more wrong with that. That's actually how abuse starts, whether it's emotional abuse or physical abuse or sexual abuse, where I will accept, as long as you like me, I will accept whatever you put on the table.
What do you think of that, Matapelo? I mean, can you give us an example of how it goes when you have this conversation with people?
No, I absolutely agree with Dr. Hanan, because I think there have been quite a few conversations where I've actually said, I don't want to talk about it, I'm not interested, or I just, you know, answer with silence. And then I think they get the picture. But what annoys me is that then the next phone call is exactly the same again. Oh my goodness, did you hear such and such has COVID? So, you know, what I've learned to do is just not answer the phone anymore. If I know that you're a culprit, I just don't answer the phone anymore, especially if you call me after 9:30 at night. So I agree completely with Dr. Hanan when it comes to the rules. Set your boundaries and let people know about those boundaries, and just stick to them. I completely agree.
But you know
agree.
What the thing, Matapelo, you know what the thing is, that people have such a sickening need to be liked. It's actually dirty and sickening. And the reason why it's such a valued currency is people go, as long as you like me, as long as even, never mind you like me, as long as you pretend to like me, I will do whatever it takes, even have a conversation that doesn't service me. We've got to get away from this, I need you to like me. Even worse, I need you to pretend to like me. That should never be a currency in any relationship.
What about what about this thing that you said now about how a lot of these conversations don't lead you anywhere? Some people have made their minds up about things, and none of us are the experts, right? Everybody's required to be an expert as well. And some person who like makes sandwiches for a living is telling you what they think of complicated virology or of, you know, vaccine manufacture. You're like, this is exhausting. I can't have this conversation with everybody, because eventually I'm just going to have no energy left. Forget about compassion fatigue. There's an intellectual fatigue that comes with that too, right? You just, I don't know the answer. Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, Pfizer, I don't know. So why am I talking about this with another person who doesn't know?
Right, right. The thing is, though, you must, everybody is like, what do they call them? Like a couch critic. You know, you're watching a boxing match and you're like, oh, what an idiot. You should have hooked him. You know, like, you get in the ring.
Yeah.
You get in the ring.
Right.
Everybody's suddenly an expert on everything just by watching it. And for yourself, if you feel that the conversation is draining you, ask yourself a very simple question. What do I want to get out of this conversation? What do I want to get out of this conversation? And can the person in front of me service that need?
Usually,
what do I want to get out of the conversation?
Usually the answer is, I want to get out of this conversation, not I want to get in.
Exactly. Exactly. So the truth is, if your answer is, I want to get information on the efficacy of the Pfizer vaccine, why would you speak to your personal trainer about that? Why would you speak to your, you know, the sandwich baron, you know, employee about your, about the efficacy of the Pfizer vaccine?
Mm.
If you want to have, if the goal is to be entertained, that's fine. That's perfect. If the goal is to connect to somebody, perfect. But ask yourself, what's the purpose of this conversation? And does the person service that purpose? And by the way, we don't have, of course, we don't have to think that way for every conversation that we have with everybody, but you have to think that way for conversations that drain you. So I give the analogy, you know, you're not going to get into your car now and you're not going to open up the engine and unpack it. And if it's working, if the conversation's working, if the car's working, good for you.
Right.
But if it's not working, ask yourself, what's the purpose? And can the person service that purpose? And if not, just get out of there.
Here's another question. Yes. And Matapelo and I think quite similarly about this. We've discussed it actually not that long ago. Is this idea that also people, you know, because we're encouraged to share and people like to share, and during this pandemic, we've got lots of things that we can share that maybe before weren't very interesting because the whole world wasn't going through it. You know, if you got the flu last year, or let's say 3 years ago, nobody cares that you got the flu. If you brought that up in conversation, they'd go, oh, okay, I also had the flu once. Now, because there are people dying and there are actual real world consequences, and you know, as Matapelo said in an email, like people losing jobs and things, people have forgotten that there's sometimes a line for private as well. Like the real answer you should give if someone asks you about the vaccine, for example, is it's none of your business. Like surely that's nobody's business. Like it's private. It's your medical stuff. You know, I don't go around telling people what medication I was on when I had migraines. It's just not interesting. And it's private, frankly. I don't need to be discussing that with everybody on social media. Do you think there's a point to that, Matapelo? Do you think there's a point, Dr. Hanan?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I don't want to know what you had for breakfast. I don't want to know what you're doing today. I'm not interested in your to-do list or your diary for the day.
Yeah.
So why am I now going to suddenly be interested in the fact that there's a COVID situation, your entire family had it, and then this one and then that one? It's almost like I really, guys, I don't care. I honestly don't.
That's I've got such enough a hard of thing my to say.
Own shit to worry about.
Yeah.
I have to worry about what I'm going to make for dinner tonight. I've got this presentation that I have to get ready, and I have to apply my mind. And now here you are busy talking to me about things that you have absolutely no clue on. I find that social media has really exposed a lot of people. It's brought to the fore the amount of what you were talking about earlier, that pseudo intellectualism that is going around. And I think coupled with that, then the COVID and the vaccines becomes too much. It's a lot.
think of the dominant cultural kind of coolness, like people are getting vaccinated and standing in a frame that says, I've just been vaccinated. Imagine doing that for your Panado that you took 3 years ago for a headache. I've just taken Panado, or I've just had a vitamin B shot, or I've just had broccoli. You know, like it wasn't cool then, but now it's cool to get vaccinated and it's out there. So we speak about whatever's out there.
Okay. All right. So you've given us some tools to deal with this. I promise Matapelo, I won't ever in our conversations ask about COVID or make you feel bad if someone I know has died.
Please don't. Because who cares?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it becomes you actually start sounding quite callous, but that's almost what you've got to be at some point, because otherwise you're not going to protect yourself, and you've got to save some emotion for those things that really, really get close. You know, somebody you know through someone's aunt's uncle's bus driver, you can't get upset about that, because otherwise you're going to have nothing left for when it does come close. And it might, you know. You've only got... But you also said a thing a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Hanan, that I keep remembering. It's like you've only got so much energy in your day, right? And you've got to apportion that energy responsibly. And if there is someone in your life who really needs compassion, then if you've got 100 compassion points that day and you want to give them 50 because they need it and you care about them, then you can't be wasting that 50 on bullshit on social media, right?
Absolutely. You know, I always ask myself a very standard question, which is, am I prepared to give this portion of energy that I would normally have given to my kids to this conversation, to this person, to this environment, to this situation? And if the answer is yes, then I will. And if the answer is no, my kids come first, there's no ways. You will never find me having a useless conversation, because the energy I'd rather give to my kids and my wife, for sure.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you both. This is a good rule to make for ourselves for this morning, and we'll try and apply it at least for this week. And until we forget that we've got to set our own rules, make our own boundaries. Matapelo, thanks very much for your time. And Dr. Hanan, always good to see you. We will catch up with both
nice
of you,
to see you guys
very shortly, I'm sure. So there we go. That's it's going to be okay with Dr. Hanan. You've got to set those rules. You've got to set those boundaries. Don't let people take advantage of you.
Yeah, and set them early. Set them. People like to, when we're already in the situation, set the boundaries early. The boundary is not for you, as Dr. Hanan was saying. I always say the boundaries are for you, the other person. Mm. I know where I stand already. Yeah. But listen, it's tricky if you aren't.
It's very tricky.
I don't know. Man. I guess people call me self-centered. So I'm very boundary.
And the next time someone asks you, you know, which vaccine you had or if you've had it, just say, well, you know what I did do is recently I went for a pap smear. I've got those results if you want to see them.
That'll shut them up quickly. All right. So also you walk a fine line between being completely impolite, which is not necessary. You know, you don't need to be rude to people. But this is also where it helps to establish the rules, because if they know the rules, then you won't hurt their feelings.
But I'd rather fall onto the I'm rude side and
no, I know
protect
you would.
My mental health
I know
than
you
be
would.
Liked. No, but it's
of course you would, you rude bastard.
Yeah, that's true. I am also rude. Yeah. Well said, actually.
All right,
turned me.
It is just after 7, and we've got lots of other good stuff coming, including Collectomania for this morning, a brand new episode, and I think you're going to like this. It's a bit of a flashback to a bygone era and a story of the 4 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Yes, some Collectomania coming your way today. And we've got your messages, your thoughts, your calls. 0797482090. You can also send us a message live on YouTube, or you can join us on the Cliff Central app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcasts. It's all happening.
CliffCentral.com.